This is We Are What We Overcome. What you're about to hear are the ramblings and reflections of three ordinary people, drawing on their own personal and occasionally professional experiences. These conversations are unprepared, subjective, and should not be taken as medical advice or instruction. Anyone seeking help should always carry out their own research, or better yet, speak to a professional about their circumstances.
Take two.
You ready?
Ready, Neil?
He's going to start it off. Should I go next?
Sure. I'm just going to cough and clear my throat again.
That was good. Good.
Thank
cough.
You. I feel like I've dislodged part of a lung.
Nice. We Are What We Overcome on this occasion features musician Matt McGuinness, improviser Nick Tyler, and psychotherapist Wes Evans. Sit back, enjoy, and remember, it's good to talk.
So this is our second podcast of We Are What We Overcome, and we had a quick chat before, and I was nominated to introduce it, but I think I should spread the love, and Nick, I think you should introduce it.
All right, so I'm introduced now. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Matt. Okay, so this is the We Are What We Overcome podcast, which is a kind of companion piece to Matt's show, We Are What We Overcome, which is a music and talk show about mental health and stuff. And so we are now doing more of the talking about mental health since we have no music with us other than that nice snippet you heard at the beginning.
But we're surrounded by musical instruments, so that kind of helps.
That's true, yeah. Maybe we... in fact, there is a jam session going on here afterwards.
We should say where we are, actually, shouldn't we?
Yeah. So we're in my patch. We're in my hometown. I was born here. We're in Burnley. And we're at the Shift Cafe, which is a local place. It's a small place just above a local pub. It's a community and music-based kind of setting, offers workshops, support to local residents, that kind of thing. And they very happily agreed to host us for this instalment.
Yeah, it's got a very chilled vibe. I like it already.
Yeah.
So at this podcast, we decided now with the second one that we'd actually, rather than have a general conversation about mental health, we try and focus on one particular area, which will probably go out to a general conversation about mental health, I guess. So today we've chosen...
I'm a bit nervous to say it, actually.
Go on.
Anxiety, yeah. So the pilot was a bit of an introduction, wasn't it? We were introducing the concept of the podcast, talking about our aims, which is just to make mental health more of an accessible topic, encourage people to be talking about it more. And we all agreed that going forward, we'd kind of tackle a topic each time, and anxiety is that topic.
It seems like a good one. It's one that seems to affect everyone at some point. I'm mindful that we've not said who we are yet.
Again.
Thanks, yes. Matt. And that's because you handed off the introduction immediately to someone else. So my name is Nick. I'm an improviser. And I work in publishing and do stuff.
My name is Wes. I'm from Burnley. I'm a psychotherapist. I work in private practice in this town. And I also work nearby in Manchester as a family therapist too.
And I'm Matt, and I'm originally from Liverpool, but now live in lovely Derby, and I'm a musician and a number of other things as well.
Well, I feel like I should say where I'm from now. So I'm from Burton-on-Trent, but I live in Nottingham. There you go. That's complete. Now you know a little bit about all of us, enough to judge us.
We also said on the way here that with me and you, Nick, that we would talk about where we are ourselves, not location-wise, but actually in our minds. So I don't know if everyone feels the most comfortable at the moment saying how they're feeling at the moment.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that seems appropriate.
It seems fitting. All right, everyone's looking at me. That's fine.
It's your suggestion.
It was my suggestion because I think talking about mental health, it relies on honesty and personal experience. It's when you hear other people talking about their experiences that we recognize our own experiences in theirs and realize that whatever we're going through, whatever we're doing is either normal or I don't want to say not normal, but is the same as other people's experience, and encourage us to think about it and talk about it a little bit more.
We mentioned last time the universality, didn't we? That was the word that I...
That's the word you were correct on, I believe.
Absolutely, yeah.
very mean and unfair way.
It's stuck with me ever since.
And that's how you should learn, through correction, because it clearly sticks in your head.
Yes, chastisation. Yes.
But I'm obviously avoiding talking about my own mental health through diverting myself cheerfully into picking on you.
Nice.
I know, it happens so easily. I think that's so often the case that we can find other things to talk about, which I'll stop doing now. So when we met last time, I'd had a couple of weeks off amitriptyline for the first time in a very long time, as I was trying to...
Sorry, is it worth telling people what
amitriptyline is? So amitriptyline is one of the probably most common antidepressants, certainly at a higher dose. At a lower dose, it's often used to treat a small amount of pain that's difficult to get rid of, but also sleep disorder and anxiety. And I've got it for a kind of a combination of those because my sleep has always sucked. I've never been good at sleeping.
I remember you mentioned that last time.
Because I get super anxious, which will prove useful, as the evening progresses and basically need to be turned off at some point in the evening in order to sleep. But I figure it's been years. Everything's going to be fine if I just stop taking it with my doctor, you know, as intended, like titrate down, which is reduce the dose, take something else for a bit, and eventually be, you know, drug-free and normal.
Normal in inverted commas. Though,
very much inverted commas. Yeah. But, you know, we all have an idea of normal in our heads, and it's usually whatever we're not. So it's a spectacularly unhelpful definition anyway. I was going to go, I want to be not me, ultimately, which is not that great. So I come off it for a few weeks, as of last week, have been re-prescribed it because it hasn't been going very well, for either from a sleep point of view or for a sort of anxiety and depression point of view. It's been a kind of a rough month. So I'm back on it now. So I'm now sleeping again, which is lovely. And I can't tell you how lovely it is to be sleeping again. Partly because lack of sleep is what will absolutely kick you in the teeth for anything else that you feel. It somehow heightens everything. You know, 2 hours sleep for a week, nothing else is manageable. Everything is too hard to deal with.
So for you, the lack of sleep kind of heightens everything else, doesn't
it? Yeah, to a wild degree. You know, it leaves you kind of that last straw point all the time. It could be anything. It's when you find yourself crying at, you know, adverts on TV featuring kittens and sad puppies being left alone.
To be fair, I've found myself crying out a few adverts in the past. I think that's okay.
Yeah, it might well be. So I'm back on that. So I'm back on a nice upward trend now. But now I'm super aware of whether or not I'm feeling things, because that was the reason I didn't want to be on amitriptyline anymore. So I think it just takes off the highs, but also the lows. And I was very conscious of not really feeling much. And so now I don't really know where I am, but I'm sleeping at least. And so that's lovely.
Mm. And on an upwards trend, you said?
I think so, yeah, for a week. So who knows?
Sometimes you have to take it week by week.
So I'm all right, I think. I've done a few of the concerts this week. I've been in Nottingham and I've been in New Milton, which is a bit warmer down in Southampton way.
So these are the We Are What We Overcome concerts,
the
yeah?
music, conversation and chat.
Yeah,
and
this is where this came from.
So I've done those, and I did one with the band and one on my own. The one on my own I found quite difficult. The one with the band, actually, it felt like everything had come together. I woke up in the morning as nervous as I was the night before, and then on the night the actual gig went really well, like it was in much better.
Well, I was at that one at the New Art Exchange. That was full. It was really good. It was a lovely vibe.
It was a really nice audience. Everyone very relaxed, and it was really good night. Finishing off with great homemade cake as well, which what can't you love? Which I'll probably go into later actually. But then I did the one in New Milton, and they've been very kind to put me up in a premier inn there every night. But I have to say, bluntly, the time I felt suicidal was linked towards a premier inn, and that's the first time I've been back at near a premier inn since.
Oh, wow.
So the first half of the show, that was in my mind. But fortunately, I think I pulled it back for the second half, and the second half was all right. But it's funny, on the way here again, Nick was saying that I should have told people. And I think actually I might do that in future. I think the show, I think, is quite honest. So maybe I should be that bit more honest and tell them what's going through my head.
At that time when you're doing the show.
Yeah. But actually, in terms of today and seeing your good self today and being with Nick and with Neil, who's at the back there, I feel quite good. How are you?
Yeah, I feel good too, yeah. I must admit, ironically, we haven't talked as much as we did in preparation for the pilot this time, have we? So
no.
We had a discussion after the pilot about how we wanted to take this forward, and that's when we agreed that we would do topics. And given that we're in separate places, we've been kind of keeping up communications over Messenger. And I've been trying to get us to agree the topic. And there hasn't been as much conversation as there was last time. So I found myself feeling mild anxieties about today. Yeah, just like, oh, well, are we prepared enough? You know, do we know what we're talking about today and that kind of thing?
But do you know, opposite to that, sorry, just thought then, I felt completely the opposite. Because of what happened last time, because how we all got on really well, and because everything that was going on, I thought the actual podcast was pretty solid in my head, so I didn't really need to talk, because I thought, it'll be fine.
Okay.
Is this like you just rocking up to do a show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival without any preparation or thought about what might take part during it?
On the way there, I didn't feel fine. Whereas today, I did, actually. I mean, I felt it'd be fine. Just meeting some friends. We're going to chat about mental health. What can possibly go wrong?
Oh, yes. Anyway, sorry, interrupt. No, it's all right. So yeah, that's where I was earlier, but now that we're here and we're sat down and in front of the mics, I'm feeling good. Like you say, it does feel pretty natural sat with you guys. And yeah, what will be, I suppose.
We're talking about anxiety today, aren't we?
We are, yeah. So it's quite relevant to what we were just talking about there. You shared your experiences, Nick, and you were just talking about where you're at with things. And I was talking about feeling anxious this morning about today. So
it's funny what provokes you and what doesn't, because most of my performance background is in improvising, so the idea of turning up without a plan is fine, absolutely fine, but the idea of actually planning what's going to happen, I'm much more likely to find stressful or worrying, because then you get too many ideas in your head, and certainly for improv you get them in your head and then you can't get them out again, and the last thing you want to do is walk onto stage with this idea in your head that no one else is going to match. That'll ruin the whole set. So I'm more used to the idea of not having stuff ready and prepared.
So there's something about relinquishing control there, isn't there? There really is. And I must admit, if I, speaking to a lot of clients as I do about anxiety, because it probably is the number one reason that people would come to see myself at my office.
Do they say that, or do you just gain that from what they're saying? Do they actually know?
People will literally come and say, I want to speak to someone because I have anxiety, or I'm suffering from anxiety or with anxiety. And so I hear that word much more than anything else, actually. Mm-hmm. And I see people for a whole host of reasons: anxiety, depression, bereavement, relationship issues, addiction. But anxiety is probably the number one reason that someone would come to see me.
That's interesting. And that it's so, and that people are able to so readily recognize it.
Well, I mean, and I suppose maybe we'll get into this as we talk more about it. But for me, anxiety has definitely become one of those big, powerful buzzwords, along with depression. You know, I think for those who maybe just are dropping in and haven't listened to the pilot, maybe go back and listen to the pilot for context of what this is all about and stuff. But you mentioned last time about likening it to cancer being, you know, the big C word. And I think anxiety and depression has got the same kind of weight to it.
Yeah.
Almost that it could be banded around far too much, actually, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point of my saying that was that control seems to be a central element to it. And I suppose that's what we were just talking about there. You two being perfectly okay with turning up without a plan. And my thinking, well, I'd like just a little bit of a plan.
Yeah. Maybe we should meet somewhere in the middle next time, shouldn't we?
Well,
I'll write the first half of the plan. And it's tricky how you balance that with groups of people, isn't it? You know, you have a group where half people are happy to have no plan at all. Mm. And then other people need a plan. And you've got to try and meet somewhere in the middle of that, which obviously we will, as a trio, be finding our way towards a way that manages our relative and respective anxieties about that.
And it highlights the fact that this is all very individual. Again, I think that was something that came out of last time. Mental health is so individual. There aren't any kind of rules or rhyme or reason to it necessarily. You know,
it's true. That also reminds me that one of the best ways to deal with someone else's mental health, or to be able to, is to know about it. Once you've recognized it and taken it into account, knowing that you're helping someone else, I think alleviates your own anxieties to a certain extent. So knowing that you would like a bit more of a plan is a good counter to my feeling a bit freaked out by the idea of a plan. It's like, oh no, there's a reason for a plan. That is control. There's a reason for this, and that's fine. It's things that have no reason. Like, oh, we need a 12-point plan. But why? All we're doing is going to the shops.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The idea of people who overplan make me insane.
Well, so that's it. There's context to it, isn't it? I mean, this could make me sound like I need a plan for everything, but actually I don't. But I did in relation to this for some reason.
Is it because it's something different?
Maybe, yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's something new. And maybe comparing to last time as well, that we had kind of agreed a structure and some plot, if you will, to navigate through.
I think you're right about context. For example, if I'm going on holiday or just away for a night, I will make a very detailed list of the things that I need to take with me. In fact, I have several template lists that I just recopy on my phone and then reuse and then check off the things as I've packed them.
Improv holidays.
No. I mean, I don't really care where I'm going once I'm there, but the idea of being away and not having the things that I need, I find that awful. And the only way to not think about it for days in advance is to have the list and then know that I'm going to rigidly follow that and tick things off as I put it into a rucksack.
Do you know, in the events we do, and we must have done maybe 40 or 50 events last year, every time I pick the kit up, I think it'd be really good if I had a tick list so I knew what was taken.
Every time. Still haven't done one.
Well, there is one in existence, but I never have it and never use it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's useful as it's just as useful. Well, it's only useful if you use it, I suppose.
And that's why you don't have any of your lovely plectrum stands.
Well, I still think, so what he's talking about is the gig the other night. I was looking for a plectrum and I had the three members of the band who were with me. Two members of the band have bought me a plectrum holder for the music stand. One's in the office, one's at home. So I blamed Joe, who was on percussion, who hadn't bought me one, that if she'd actually bought me one, the third one, it would have been with me. So it was her fault.
Yeah, of course.
There's nothing like externalising the sources of anxiety.
Yeah, talk about taking responsibility.
I think she agreed that it was her fault. If you can take...
I think, yes, you shamed her into it during the show.
Yeah. Yes, well done. Powerful tool.
Poor Joe.
But, you know, again, that's the same thing. I was looking around for a plectrum. But I had like hundreds of them in every pocket. But if I'd had a plectrum, I could put like two or three in.
Well, so how was that? Right in that very moment, looking around for a plectrum, not being able to find one.
Do you know what? I wasn't actually anxious, I don't think, because the show was going
hopeless.
All right.
So we need an example of you being horribly anxious.
Yeah, that was going to be my segue in.
Yeah, that was a great link, Wes.
I was really anxious. But no, I think it was the room. And do you know what? Given another situation, maybe I would have been. Mm. But actually, the show was going really well. People were very relaxed. I felt quite comfortable, so it was all right, and it was part of the discussion then, and I told everyone what was happening and made a joke out of it rather than just looking around for something and be making some kind of, you know, awkward silence. I just told, which is pretty much what Nick and another friend had told me what to do live. If you've got done something wrong or something's going wrong, just tell everyone.
Yeah, because trying to hide it will look awful. Oh. And it'll be really obvious. Oh my God, I've got no plectrum, and then run out of the room. That's going to leave people like, that's probably not going that well. We don't trust in you as a performer anymore. We don't trust in the show. We don't have confidence that anything that you're relating is real anymore. It's tricky. You can stay within your performance character without losing that, just by being honest.
I sing in a band, a seven-piece band, and every gig, there's always something that doesn't go right, whether it's starting a song incorrectly, or we've had the guitarist start in the wrong key, and just all sorts of things, you know. And the bass player missing his cue to come in, and I even had to do it on the microphone myself one time. It's just to jokingly remind him, you know, bum 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 bum, just give him the eye contact. And in that scenario, you just kind of roll with it and say to the audience, well, that went well, didn't it? You know, and have a laugh about it, and it's okay. There is something about context. So this situation and not feeling too prepared induced a little bit of mild anxiety in me. But at the same time, there's so many scenarios in which I'm perfectly happy to be unprepared, to roll with punches. Maybe we should talk about what we're saying anxiety is then. So it sounds like just off this little bit of a conversation, there's so many situations, scenarios that can induce the feeling. But what is it that we're talking about when we say anxiety? I described it as a big buzzword. What does it mean to you guys?
For me, it's an absolute sort of yawning abyss that at its worst is completely paralyzing. So worried that I'm frozen. And it's not even really, it's not worried about anything specific. I think that's why it bothers me. Because if you can get it down to like, I'm worried that this thing's going to happen, you can do something about that. I think it's anxiety that goes beyond being concretely linked to something. You know, if you can identify what it is, then you've got maybe a route to a solution. But something that you can't link just hangs inside your body. And I don't know, I just end up feeling it's choking. I feel just my head expanding. It's unable to make a choice, and you're just left until someone else makes the choice, either because you've not chosen to do something, because, I don't know, life just naturally bowls you on past. It's horrible. It's crushing.
So like being, so you're talking about, I heard you say two things there. So the first was kind of a very logical thing there. I'm worried about this particular thing and that induces some anxiety for me. But the second thing you were saying was kind of like being frozen and stuck with a feeling and not really knowing what you could attribute it to. Yeah. Just like a felt anxiety and not really knowing why.
Yeah. And I feel the first one is kind of legit. I think that's reasonable. You know, there's a thing that you're worried about. That's a cause. Yeah, there's a good reason to be worried about turning up for a job on the first day. That's perfectly fine. That's cool. I think people should be worried about that. Yeah, there should be some anxiety around those things. That seems fine. I think it's when it becomes separated from, or feels like it's separated from causality. That's when I feel lost because I can't figure out what the thing is that I need to fix. If I figure out what the thing is I need to fix, I might not be able to fix it, but at least I can point to it.
Mm.
And that's a measure of control, as we're saying. You know, you can get some control over at least by recognizing it. So when you can't recognize it and it's just a mass of stuff jammed inside of you and spilling out of your face.
I've started to give into it, you know. I've started to try to fix everything else when I don't feel like that, so that when I do feel like that, I don't have to do anything. Do you know what I mean? So you just like roll with it and I don't have to make
the space to wallow in it.
Just give up and watch some naff TV with the kids and then I feel better. And
something about like relinquishing control or something there. It's like just riding the wave. And that's probably a term somewhere in literature about anxiety.
It is now.
Yeah,
it's yours.
It definitely is. I don't think I can claim it. Riding the wave. There's certain ideas we'll talk about that just going with it and recognizing that it's temporary and it'll be over soon, kind of thing.
Yeah. So that the only issue with that is that when you're you need to do certain things, or you need to do a job, or you need to get some money in and stuff. You don't really have the opportunity.
When you can't just switch off and sit back.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm trying to get to the point where I can, but... You know.
I think what you said there, Nick, and a little bit of what you just said there's something about anxiety being a normal, acceptable experience, probably a needed experience, but that maybe it becomes a problem if it starts to get in the way of regular day-to-day functioning, or gets in the way of, you know, navigating life.
I guess at the point at which you can't get up and go to work, can't interact with your kids and your partner or whatever, you know, that's when it's gone beyond this is an annoying thing that I suffer with to this is just stopping life.
Or I was thinking kind of, yeah, it's all right for me to be worried about this thing that I've got coming up. Of course I'm going to feel a bit nervous, worried, anxious about that, but then there's some kind of level that it goes past where, hold on, well, this is a bit too much. This is affecting me a bit too much.
So I feel that as a physical sensation rather than a mental when it gets to that point. Yeah, it's inhabiting me.
Well, I was thinking about, you know, the person you described there needing to meticulously plan a trip to the shop. You know, they know exactly what it is that they're worried about. Mm. They're going to the shop. So I suppose that's not just a felt sense that they can't attribute to anything. But surely not so much planning is needed to go to the shop.
You wouldn't think so.
So it's like the volume's turned up or something.
Yeah, and I think that's why it feels kind of crazy. It's like, this is clearly not okay. Yeah, this is more than is required to undertake this activity. This is fine.
The biggest thing I have found that has to be done with clients is finding out what it means to them and putting a bit of context to it. But again, I talked about it being this buzzword and this big scary word. And I was talking about the amount of people that are coming to see me about anxiety. And Matt, you asked, do people actually say that? Do they use that word? And they do. And more often than not, I've noticed the way it's described. Lots of people will say, I have anxiety. Or it's a disease that they've caught, you know. And I always like to say, well, anxiety is an experience. It's something we all experience. But it sounds like for you that this experience has become too much, too overwhelming.
We had the same conversation, didn't we, in the pilot podcast about sadness, I think, wasn't it?
We should
all feel sad, but it's when it's...
Yeah.
I think someone said about when it's more than 6 weeks, then it, you know... It was a time.
Yeah, well, yeah, that wasn't I think I mentioned... Exact date on it, yeah, I mentioned... Because we talked about the DSM. So we'll mention that again. This is kind of like the medical Bible, and it in the DSM, it lists all the different mental health disorders, as they would phrase
them. DSM stands for?
Yes, the Diagnostic Statistic Manual. In there, it lists all of the different mental health conditions, disorders, however you would like to term it. And it gives these very specific kind of criteria and stipulations as to when it would qualify as you having a mental health condition or not. And the 6 weeks thing, I think, if memory serves me correctly, I think I chucked in a quick example there that for PTSD, if you're still affected after a traumatic event beyond 6 weeks, then we would label it as some kind of problem, in inverted commas, you know.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Regardless of the timescale, it's a normal feeling that you feel for a normal length of time or to an abnormal degree, isn't it?
Yeah. So there is something about it persisting for longer than expected, or maybe experiencing it much more strongly than others might. But the big, like I say, the biggest task I have with clients is to kind of say, this is not something you have. This is not something that's wrong with you. This is an experience, and at the moment, this is causing you problems. And we can help maybe balance things out, maybe help you understand it a little better, cope a little better, turn the volume down. That's an expression I find myself using quite a lot, because anxiety is like a function that we need. We need to be able to feel anxiety.
Yeah, so she's going and doing dumb things. Yeah, you should feel anxious before jumping off a cliff.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, sure.
It might stop you.
It's
from
like
doing
a, it's like an alarm bell, or it's like an evolutionary warning system or something. You know.
So is that when it goes wrong? Is it because the trigger threshold ends up set really low for some reason? So it doesn't have to be being faced by a wolf. You're just faced by a kitten, and it triggers the same fight or flight.
It's an interesting thought, and I've thought about this a lot, about what people would say the different causes of anxiety are. And some people talk about a person's level of resilience being a factor. How much one can withstand, you know, how much stress or one can withstand. I often will find that I can see two main causes. So the first being, and we mentioned CBT last time, didn't we? This idea that thoughts, feelings and behaviours are connected. So that one big cause of anxiety is this thought process. So in the example you gave, I suppose, thinking I am nervous about this, it is how you think about that this coming up that can induce this anxiety. But the other is this felt anxiety that just seems to be there, and there's no real reason why it should be there. And quite often I find that that is a lot of pent-up emotion that hasn't been expressed. So quite commonly with clients that I'm seeing, it's either helping them to manage the thoughts about something or helping them to express some stuff that they need to express.
Do you know, part of the thing that I've noticed with it is when I had kids, I noticed my pattern of behaviour changing. So like, you know, checking that they were still breathing 20 times in an evening, doors. And I'd never used to do anything like that. And now it's moved on to other things like checking the doors locked, you know, 10 times or this, or the handbrakes on the van, you know, or all that sort of stuff.
And that's something that you can find yourself doing sometimes, is it?
All the time. Yeah. And it started from when I, so I blame them. Well, we blame the parents, let's blame the children.
Well, why not? Yeah.
It's got to be someone else, right?
Well, yes. We mentioned, you know, that's another thing that that comes up quite a lot as being a trigger or a cause for anxiety is life-altering events or passing through life stages, if you will, you know, becoming a parent or becoming 40 or getting your first mortgage, whatever. Yeah. These can be life events. Yeah, absolutely. So there's quite a lot of different things that that are attributed to inducing anxiety in people. Absolutely.
It's interesting. It makes it all kind of sound like anxiety is a response to suppression of various kinds. You know, rather than talking through and rationalizing why you might be worried about something, you feel anxious instead. And rather than expressing feelings, you end up compacting them down to the point where you feel anxious about everything. That feels kind of like the same thing, like a failure to express results in a further internal sensation that isn't now the failure to express itself, but has now become its own thing that bleeds into every other aspect of your life. Every other decision you make is then afflicted by this anxiety because of some part of yourself that you've not expressed or some idea that you've not talked through fully.
Yeah, that's, well, yeah. I suppose you two guys have reflected on your experiences of, well, and myself as well. yours, Matt, you were talking about blaming the kids, that you've noticed some changes in yourself
in a nice way, kids. Yeah.
For me, it was thinking about something that was coming up, and control seemed to be in the mix there. What about for you, Nick?
What, the causes of anxiety?
Yeah. Do you have any kind of insight or idea as to... You've mentioned sleep as a key thing.
Sleep, yeah, lack of sleep will mess me up in
every respect.
You talked
about the thinking about something and being anxious, or just that felt sense and not really knowing what to attribute it to. What is your experience?
A lot of it is it just building up? And I guess there are certain aspects of control. I like to know roughly what's going on. I want to know what's going on some evenings in the week, and I know that I need a certain amount of time to myself to not necessarily do anything, even if it's just watching TV and hanging out at home. And I start to get more anxious the more of those days or evenings feel like they're getting taken away as I agree to do stuff. And I'm left with less and less time that feels like my time, even though the things that I'm signing up and agreeing to do are things that I will enjoy, that are good things, that doesn't seem to count. And that I find that can leave me feeling kind of compressed. Like there's no space to breathe between all of these good fun things. Mm. To where it starts to feel ridiculous. Like, oh, so I've got a weekend of fun improv shows and workshops and stuff to do. Well, that's good, right? Apparently not. No, internally, no. There's some space that's required in order to navigate through those things effectively.
So I'm hearing something about like being overwhelmed by the amount of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And then there was something about managing everything that's going on, and maybe that control thing again.
I think possibly it's degree of overwhelming, of being overwhelmed. You know, you can take being out every night for a while, and then at some point you need some of it back. And I guess that's the same thing that happens for me in the evening, certainly if I'm not taking amitriptyline. I might have had a good day at work, get back, do good fun things, play with some Lego, watch some TV with my other half of my cats, all good things. Looking forward to another day of going to work and doing cool stuff there, and more things. And yet from like an hour or so after getting home, that just anxious sensation just rises through my body.
Right.
Just apparently unstoppably, without something just cutting it off or damping it all down, turning the volume back down, I think is what amitriptyline does for me. It turns it, back down to a sort of a manageable 4 or 5 where you can just ignore it.
So it sounds like when you get home, there's space for it to kind of emerge or something.
Mm, it's a weird combination of either having too much to do and yet not enough at the same time. Mm. If I'm not doing anything, I'm not good.
That sounds a tricky balance to strike then.
Yeah, I suck at it. Yeah,
too much to do or not enough.
Yeah, and I found that's quite useful. If I realise that I've not got enough to do, then do anything is effective. It doesn't really matter what it is, even if it's go to Sainsbury's, go and sort some coloured Lego parts into a different box, play with the cat. Making a decision is more anxiety relieving than not making a decision, because not making a decision just makes it worse. You've again failed to decide to do anything. I've failed to decide to do anything. So that is now added on to the anxiety block that's already there. In addition to being anxious, you failed to do anything to resolve the anxiety. Well done. You have plus 10 anxiety. It's that kind of building process that you need to, or I need to somehow put a stop to.
Even as you're describing that to me, there's so much there that you're putting across. I've thought this last time and even more so this time, you strike me as quite a logical guy.
I would like to be.
Tackle things, think about things, dissect things.
Yeah, I think generally it's not a bad way to go through things. I did a degree in philosophy, which is an entirely unhelpful use of 3 years.
Just sat around and pondered life for 3 years.
Played a lot of
Tekken
and smoked a lot of weed, yeah. And watched a lot of Deep Space Nine. So, yeah, it wasn't all bad, but it wasn't necessarily useful. But I found it as a training and a way of trying to resolve problems, at least interesting, and to try and apply it to yourself. Because otherwise, what have you got? It's just, I feel hideous. Great. On to the next day. If you don't have a way to try and analyze it and try and get into it, then I think, again, that's another plus 10 anxiety. You've got a thing that you can't do anything about.
I suppose the flip side of that is that it could be quite easy to think yourself into a frenzy, couldn't it? Mm. And speaking from my experience, I think sometimes I can overanalyze things or go over things a little too much. And that would be where some of my anxieties would raise their head, definitely.
Oh, for sure.
the mind. What's the quote there? It's the mind is a beautiful servant or a horrible master. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. The mind's a box of jigsaw pieces, all from different jigsaws. Good luck.
Yeah. So it's my job to sit with people and help them try and put that jigsaw together.
Sounds rough.
You know, the biggest thing, I seem to be anxious and worry over loads of stuff, and just, and I have done forever, and I've been trying, really trying to stop that.
Like, you
know, what? Could be anything. I mean, you know, just lots of different outcomes or different ways things could go. Some of, I mean, you said it, I think, last time, you know, some of which have got nothing to do with reality whatsoever and couldn't possibly happen, but you still get anxious over them. There was, I don't even know what film it was, or some NAF program I've been watching on some, and someone just said, aren't you worried about dying? And he says, well, and he says, well, you know, don't you think you're going to die in this battle? And he said, yeah, I am, but why worry about it? I've got to go through it once, why twice, you know?
Yeah,
I really wish I could be in that mode, and it makes absolute perfect sense, doesn't it? You know, but you still can't, you know, and I guess that's fine over something that's actually going to happen. But when you actually do it over things that aren't going to happen, it's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, that's just something cycling crazily.
Yeah, so there's that rational and irrational kind of thing there, isn't there? Almost this idea that it's acceptable for us to worry about some things, but so again, this threshold that we can go past. Oh, it's perfectly acceptable to worry about this and to spend a bit of time worried about that to a certain extent, but if you start worrying about that and getting onto that, then, oh, well, you're going too far, you know? I mean, that gets us onto a whole potentially other topic there about the rules and oh, well, from what you've described, you're suffering with anxiety, but from what you described, you're okay, that's fine, you know. But again, it pulls me back to that. Well, it's an individual experience, actually, and this is me, this is how I experience things, and this is what I'm okay with, and this is what I'm less okay with, and I want support with this, you know. And again, with a client, I want to sit and figure that out at the beginning here. It's not for me to put my idea of what is normal and okay on someone and let's get there kind of thing. But anxiety is such a big topic. I was thinking just a minute ago, you know, again, me saying, oh, let's bring some structure to this to make myself feel good.
Oh, you and science.
Yeah, I know it. There's a list here of types of anxiety conditions. Shall I read them out?
Yeah. Sure.
And how long are they first?
Are we voting on them or owning up to them?
Well, let me go through the list and let's just see what happens, yeah? Let's not be too prepared.
Sure.
Let's roll with the punches. Oh, good on, guys.
Well done, Wes.
Thank you. So, agoraphobia, body dysmorphic disorder.
You know, I wasn't even thinking of those things as anxiety things.
Claustrophobia, compulsive hoarding, compulsive skin picking, dental phobia, depersonalization disorder, fear of flying, generalized anxiety disorder, which for my thinking is probably the most common. Injection phobia, health anxiety, irritable bowel syndrome, which I suppose is maybe like a physical outlet of anxiety. Obsessive compulsive disorder. You were talking about checking door handles and locks. Panic disorder, phobias, post-traumatic stress disorder, postnatal anxiety, seasonal affective disorder, separation anxiety, social anxiety, stress, toilet phobia. Yeah, that's pretty much it, really.
Yeah, that's interesting because I'd not thought about the phobias in general as being wrapped up in that.
They say, sit under the umbrella of anxiety.
I guess the experience of feeling them is similar, you know, that I get somewhat arachnophobic, less so than I used to be. Yeah, and that would make me super, you know, I'd feel that as a physical presence, like the sight of one of those evil eight-legged things.
Well, so there's another thing then. So how anxiety could typically affect someone. So obviously that we've been talking about the thought processes there, haven't we, and the emotions, but the physiological responses, you know, like feeling shaky, heart palpitations, dry mouth, panic attacks, that kind of thing. Just that list and everything we've been talking about at different points, it just shows how meaty a topic anxiety is, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking then, I talked about like a man making, but I actually did caving with the scouts and it was like sort of the easy caving for 8-year-olds, you know, so you can imagine it's not really caving. But there was one bit where there was...
you could probably
It was in a cave, you know. So all these kids were like going for it and loving it and everything else. And there was one bit we had to squeeze through to get to the next bit and most of them just went for it and stuff. And I started really getting panicking about it. But part of me was looking at these 8 and 9 year olds having great fun. And also part of my understanding that it's a scout movement and there's, you know, thousands of people have done this, but then there's a part of me that thought, I can't do this, you know, just, but it was weird. I was sat there trying to wrestle between those three things. And I did it eventually, but God, it took a lot. It's just, but it's pathetic. Isn't it?
There's some, well, I don't think it's pathetic. Be, you know, be a bit easier on yourself there, Matt.
Yeah, there you can feel things without punishing yourself for feeling them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I still think it's still trying to come to terms with the fact that I feel like that. I don't want to, you know, I don't, it's, there's so many other things that we should be
like. So
about.
It's like you shouldn't have felt it then, yeah?
Well, it's in comparison to the, you know, to all the other problems
to the kids
the world,
that we're fine.
But wouldn't you, that's an easy way to talk down your own feelings, isn't it? It's like, well, I shouldn't worry about, you know, I don't know whether or not my entire family will die because, you know, there's another country that's in a drought at the moment and millions of people are starving there. Yeah, yeah, well, it they both matter.
That was a harsh example there. I shouldn't worry about whether my family might die.
I was trying to find a gentle one and yeah. just
you could
couldn't.
Have picked something a bit more trivial to highlight your example. I shouldn't worry about going to the shops when there are people that worry about, you know, staying alive each day. That's the kind of thing you were getting
yeah,
at.
Yeah, yeah. But it is that extreme, isn't it? And just because one of those things is true doesn't mean the other one can't also be true. But I think it's easy to try and for us to try and talk our way out of how we feel by just effectively just putting ourselves down.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're an idiot for feeling like that. It's bad that you think about that. And it's not necessarily, it might not be helpful to you, but it is still what you're doing.
Yeah, it's valid.
And dismissing it doesn't resolve it.
So that's you told Matt. Matt. Stop dismissing your feelings.
Get back in that cave.
Yeah.
Maybe you're dismissing how I feel about myself, feeling about myself.
Yeah, very possibly. Maybe. Yeah, I'm saying
talking ourselves into tangles.
Yeah, I'm saying that your meta feelings are less important than your actual feelings. Yeah.
There's something really relevant in what you both said, though. The shoulds. I think, for me, we all carry around certain shoulds. And so, like, I should be able to handle this better. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be at a certain place in my life by now. That's something I've found to be quite a common thread. Something that can be anxiety-inducing for people, but also something that can exacerbate the problem. I'm feeling this way, and I shouldn't feel this way. Almost adding like an extra layer to things, you know. Those are really powerful things. Shoulds. Sometimes they're called introjects. So it's kind of like we grow up and are influenced by everything we see around us. And at some point, when we get to a certain age, we start to think that this is how things should be. This is how I should be. And if I don't match up to that, there's a problem, you know.
And those are sort of societal expectations that say, you know, you'll grow up, you'll grow up, you'll go to university, you'll get a good job, probably have a family, settle down, get married, nice house. I don't know what comes next. I join the golf club if you're my stepdad, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those things.
And that's quite a cliched and obvious version of that. But also maybe even really kind of nuanced kind of things as well. We just have this idea that I just shouldn't feel this way. Or I suppose there's a lot about being a man as well. There are a lot of shoulds about being a bloke.
I keep thinking about trying to fix it, actually, or trying to have a go at it. So I keep thinking about trying to find some organisation or group where I could go caving. And take it, you know, maybe half the speed that normal caving would do to see what happens.
Yeah, so I went caving before and I felt the way I did and I didn't like that I felt that way. Yeah. So now I need to make myself not feel that way when I go
basically,
into a cave.
Yeah.
I've got some friends who've gone through, I can't remember what they call it, you know, anti-phobia therapy.
Like exposure therapy.
That's it, exposure therapy, yeah. Where they really, like, get given tarantulas to hold and stuff.
Maybe I should do it and then I could feedback the podcast.
I would be fascinated.
We should record a podcast in a cave.
That's a really good idea. Yeah.
Let's do that.
Nick's desperate to see you in an anxious mess. So
You've seen me on numerous occasions.
That's true. It's cruel, but still fascinating.
Yeah. Think of it as a scientific study. Yeah.
Mm. Did you want to talk a bit about how you can reduce anxiety and how if we have any methods between ourselves for reducing anxiety, not necessarily just clinical ones.
There are lots of ways that we probably started to mention naturally there, and this is self-care again pops up. That was a big topic last time, wasn't it? The ways in which we soothe ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about, my ears pricked up when you talked about going home and doing certain activities in and things.
Yeah.
Almost to soothe yourself.
Certainly recognize that there are activities that are soothing and deeply engrossing. And I think for me, that works. So that's what will tune everything else out. I can happily sit down with a box of Lego and not move for 4 or 5 hours, sufficiently involved in that activity that nothing else really exists.
Yeah.
You even have a bottle of beer next to me, I'll barely have drunk that. And then just happily tinkering with things, finding those activities in a way that it doesn't necessarily consume 5 hours.
Yeah.
It's trickier.
Maybe there is some kind of balance in the middle there, something it's helpful for us to think about what helps us cope and what is a good healthy distraction. But where's the line where we cross over there, where we're just covering over what we feel, you know? I'm playing devil's advocate a little
sure,
bit.
Sure. I think it's a bit like what we talked about with mental health before, because we talk mostly about bad mental health. Because no one feels a need to talk about good mental health. Yeah, you know, I've been trying to keep a kind of daily check-in diary for myself, because I knew I was kind of going off amitriptyline. I was heading off the deep end quite badly, and that made me write down some of those experiences. It's so much easier to write that stuff when I feel awful. It's really hard to want to bother to do it when I feel fine. Because who cares? Who cares? Why would I care? But it does matter, because having any of the record means I can go back and go, oh, that's what feeling okay was like. Yeah, these diaries are, and they were useful when I went through counseling, that I still had my diaries when I was a teenager, to be able to go back and look at an actual first-hand account of what I felt like, what I was remembering and thinking about at the time, rather than separated by 20 years. To get that raw first person, I was like, ooh, that was messy. You know, I don't feel like that anymore. That's good, but I do feel bad for that kid. And having a list of things that are good and trying to remember what it is like when things are fine is really useful, because it's very hard to reach for when you feel bad, to go, what is it? What is it when things are normal? So I suspect one of the things we need to do is, when we feel fine, make some attempt to recognize what those feelings and that state is like, because then you can try and get back to it, rather than trying to get back to a state that you're only imagining.
So that's something you want to do going forward, is it then?
Yeah, so I've tried that, like a list of things that I don't feel bad today. These are the things that I feel good about. That's quite nice, because then I can go back to that list and go, well, I still feel good about those things. Cats,
yeah,
Lego, science fiction, whatever.
Makes sense. What about you, Matt?
I've started to relax into the whole thing. So my thing when I'm feeling like that and there's too much going on is mostly to watch The Arrow with my boys.
You mentioned that earlier, actually. Yeah. Just kind of letting go of it and just sitting.
Or Merlin with Katie or something like that. And it's I wouldn't say it's mindless, but it's fairly close to that, isn't it? You know, if you ever watch The Arrow yeah. It's just every week they have the same sort of conversation and it's the same, never seems to learn, you know.
But you get to see him do those amazing pull-ups without using his, you know, he just jumps onto the next bar. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, so that's what I do, basically.
So yours seems to be about kind of try to switch off a little bit and have some downtime.
I just try to roll with it, I think. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, I suppose that's quite important.
It's like focusing on another activity, isn't it? It's choosing to focus into something else that then leaves all the anxious stuff, presumably waiting behind a door for you to stop doing that. Now you can be worried again.
What I find with the anxious stuff, that it actually, I get worried, I worry about something, but if I roll with it and when I come back to it and start thinking, it's gone. I mean, because it isn't actually real, is it, in the first place?
Right, once it's burned all its way through your soul.
Dark.
Yeah, no, I mean, I generally, it's some of the stuff I'm trying to do in terms of an issue with mental health, for me, is recognizing that they aren't real, you know, that. And so why would I place any importance on them? Why would I give any thought to them? If I can do something else and ignore them, it isn't like not recognizing it. It's recognizing the fact that they're not real. Mm-hmm. And so if that works for me and, you know, 2 hours later, I've watched 2 episodes of Arrow, ate loads of popcorn, and I'm fine, back to being, you know, my usual self.
Well,
then great.
I think that's the key thing, isn't it? It's finding what is helpful to you. You talked about your approach, and one thing I heard within that was something about putting things into perspective.
Mm.
And again, quite a logical kind of approach.
It kind of helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was definitely part of what you were saying, at least what I heard.
Anyway. It always makes me like the horror of when you wake up at 4 a.m, because we wake up like every 3 hours, don't we, anyway? But you've got that couple of minutes of being awake where if you become like too conscious, if you've got like ongoing concerns, they suddenly pop back into your head. And at 4 a.m, worrying about what to get out of the freezer is wildly more disruptive and serious a thing to think about when you wake up than it would be the rest of the time. And it kind of feels like it's a lot of times it's those sorts of problems turned up to the point where they're no longer trivial. I don't know what my thought was with that, but that's what it was making me think of. Yeah, that thing where you can't go back to sleep because you've got something really trivial to resolve in your head.
Mm.
It clearly doesn't matter at all and wouldn't matter to you if you were properly awake. But you just can't get out of it at that time. And it's like, it's as if that time and that sort of hypnagogic state is transposed on other times in your life when you should be able to escape from the need to sleep or something. I don't know. I'm rambling now because there's a thing in my head about it feeling weird and I don't know how to express it.
I suppose my thinking is, I come back to that two-pronged approach thing. It's finding ways that we can cope and manage and soothe. But for me, it's really important to understand why this keeps happening. So quite often with a client, I'll say that maybe that's what we should try and do, help you manage along the way, whether that be with some self-care, whether it be medication for some people, whether it be breathing exercises or distractions and things like that, but also to try and understand why it is that I keep experiencing this anxiety in the way that I do. And that, I suppose, that takes us to these different causes that we talked about. Is it because of a specific event that's happened? Is it because I'm thinking about something in the way that I am? Do I have lots of pent-up emotion and stuff that I need to get out and express? And so for me, I think I'm always working to try and help a client do those two things. Learn to manage along the way, and that's a very individual thing. And then learn maybe what are some of the causes of this. And again, that's an individual thing.
And I guess it can just be how you are, in which case recognizing that that's how you are is in itself part of that control.
Well,
you know, you're going to get overwhelmed sometimes, but then later you will not be overwhelmed, knowing that that's going to come, that, you know, it is a wave that comes and goes. Maybe that's enough sometimes to get a sense of control.
Yeah, maybe it is. And again, I'd find time and time again that it's very, very individual. I work as an integrative practitioner. So I'm kind of humanistic at core and relational, but integrative means that I work using certain ideas from certain places. And we mentioned CBT last time. CBT is probably the number one therapy offered.
We're probably, again, doing acronyms, aren't we? So that's cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah, thank you. So typically speaking, if a person goes to the doctors describing something that sounds like anxiety, they will be sent or offered CBT. It's kind of the therapy of choice. And what that does is that helps a person look at this kind of thoughts, feelings, behavior connection that we discussed last time. That can be really useful in dealing with anxiety, help figuring out how your thought processes will take you down a certain path, how thinking that way invokes such a feeling and then such a behavior. Sometimes, as well as trying to understand the cause and help people express things, I will spend some time helping them to manage certain unhelpful thoughts if that's something that's relevant to them. I talk about challenging a thought. So I think we touched upon it, this irrational versus rational stuff. Mm. So it sounds like you, Matt, were saying that sometimes I just help myself realize that that's not a rational thing to be worried about, or why would I want to worry about that kind of thing? And you're the same, actually.
Yeah, I met someone the other day whose name I can't now remember, which is terrible because they've got quite a nice business idea. They're producing these little origami leaflets that you fold up into a little bird face with a mouth, and in it is effectively saying, let's reframe that thought more positively, as a constant reminder. Like, you've had that thought, can you possibly reframe that in a way that punches yourself less in the face?
Yeah, well, reframing is a cognitive behavioral technique.
Yes, I've done some CBT. It's useful. I've probably forgotten most of the good stuff, but I've kept bits of it, I think.
Well, like I said, I take certain bits of it. I'm not a CBT practitioner, but I do take certain ideas from it. And I came up with a kind of, if we're dealing about unhelpful thinking, that is, I came up with a kind of a process one can go through. So, I mean, it's not mine. It's taken from different bits of literature that are available and stuff, but challenging a thought first, said, is this a real worry or not? There's the kind of the first approach, and sometimes just realizing that it's not actually something maybe I need to worry about as much can be something that's helpful in the moment. The next one after that is kind of learning to let go. So even if there is a bit of truth to this, the next question is, can I do anything about it? So if I can't do anything about it, what's the use in me spending so much time worrying about it, kind of thing. And then the next two are about postponement and planning. So if it is a real concern and there is something I can do about it, postponement, well, can I do anything now? I mean, how many times, I'm guilty of this, spend time worrying about something that's coming up next month or next week, and I can't really do much until then.
Yep.
And so postponement is kind of telling myself I can shelf this, and it's a concern, but I'll pick it up later, or I can't do anything until I hear from such a body, or until I get that letter through the post. Or
sure, whatever, I'd stick a date on it and go, I'll worry about it on this date.
Absolutely, So giving yourself permission to shelf it. And then the last one is planning. So, okay, yeah, I need to do something about this. Right, let's get a plan in place and do something then. So that is something that at times I've gone through with people to try and help them manage the thinking part of their anxieties. But for me, it really is just as important to the expression of things or dealing with something that's happened. That's just as important. Distraction is a valid tool, but I don't think it can be the only tool. Certainly it wouldn't be for me either. But.
Do you know, there's a really good routine by a comedian called Charlie Chuck. Do you know him?
No, I don't think I do, actually.
So, and I just realised what you're saying. He must have gone through this stuff because he does this really well-known routine. Well-known for, you know, for him, who's not that well-known. And then he does the whole thing about, so he starts off with the routine and he says, a friend of mine said he wasn't very well. And I said to him, if you're not very well, there's only two things to worry about. One is whether it's going to carry on or whether you're going to get better. And if you're going to get better, you've got nothing to worry about. But if you're not going to get better straight away, you've only got two things to worry about, whether it's going to be short-term or long-term. If it's going to be short-term, don't worry about it. It's fine. Whether it's long-term, you've only got two things to worry about, whether it's incurable, and it goes on and on and on.
Wow.
And it goes on and on. And then the big punchline at the end is he goes, what was I talking about? And that's it. You know,
I like it. You get absolutely buried in worrying about worrying. Yeah. You got no idea what you're worrying about.
It's like
about
a perfect demonstration of like overthinking yourself out of a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe on this podcast, we should put a link to the routine online somewhere.
Yeah, that's good. Sure.
We should wrap it up, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we're at that time. So I suppose my take from it is that it really just shows how complex and individual this is and how commonplace it is, actually. The biggest thing that I would want to put across, though, is that it's not something you have or catch or are kind of stuck with. It's an experience, and experiences can change. If a person comes to see me and they're suffering in a bad way with these kind of feelings, there was a time when they weren't feeling that way, and there can be a time again when they're not feeling that way. And for me, it's important to figure out what it means for you and what brought it on and kind of how it is that you experience it, whether that is handling some thoughts that you're having and getting on top of that, whether it's talking about something that's happened and getting that off your chest, well, and all the other things that we spoke about. That long list of anxiety-related disorders, inverted commas, that we mentioned, I think they all fall under the umbrella because of the different ways in which this can kind of present themselves. OCD sits under the umbrella because usually that will start with a thought process or that felt sense, but it shows itself with compulsions, for example.
They're like reasonable concerns that have gotten out of hand.
Yeah, like the volume's turned up.
So I think the thing I'll take from it is what Nick was saying before about writing a diary when you feel good as well, when you feel bad. And also I think that's the same thing with mental health, you know, that, and with blokes, you know, that when they feel bad, they're in a bad place. And when they feel good, they think, oh, well, I'm all right now.
Yeah.
But actually, going from what Nick said, people should use that time when they feel good to try and get some help for when they feel bad.
I agree. Mental health is maintained. And I think you're right, and myself included, we kind of drop our guard a little bit when we're feeling all right. Your thing of writing things down, I think, is twofold there. It's helping you make sense of your thoughts about things, so it's probably good for the logical side of things. But actually, you're expressing yourself when you write stuff down. So if we think about things in that kind of two causes, thoughts getting out of control or pent-up feelings, that's potentially a really good way to tackle both.
I think so. Once you've got it written down, you can look at it and go, that's just nuts. Yeah, I mean, I've done that before. I went down and go, that's madness. This must read terribly.
That's the publisher in you, though.
Well, partly, but also I know my family read these things, so I tend to put a code at the bottom. Like this, I know this sounds really bad, but it's good that I'm writing this down. Please don't worry. It's better that I'm doing this now than anything else. But yeah,
thinking of them, even when you're not feeling so great yourself.
It's worth a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth a shot.
Okay. Are we done for today, I think?
I think we are.
I think so.
We've got some more dates planned, haven't we? We're
So let's. We'll.
Derby again next.
So our aim is to try and record this monthly at some place that all three of us who live in different cities can get to.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing logistical challenge. But we've got dates planned through to August currently.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. And so it'll be a different topic next time.
Mm. Yeah. So expect this at some point.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. See you later. Next time.
If you've been affected by anything that we've talked about tonight, that's cool. We were kind of hoping you would be. If you haven't been affected by anything tonight, then that's great too. You're probably fine. Of course, if you say you're fine, there's a good chance you aren't. So you might also have been affected. And if you've been affected before, you probably will be again. Please talk to someone. It can get better, and together we can survive. We are what we overcome. And this poor little boy, grounded by the sun, paler by his side, but something strikes.